Wesley with Martin Bester.
Dis my groot voorreg en plesier om ons spesiale gaste te verwelkom, Hietjie Berg. Hoe gaan met jou?
Just man, amazing. Ek het my vroukie was nou in die Kaap gewees vir 4 dae, sy en Lemay en die nanny. So ek I don't like it. Ek wil hulle moet terug wees by die huis. Het gister teruggekom. My dogtertjie word binnekort 2. Can you believe it?
Wow.
En ek sê dit net wat Kola hier so ja, my vrou wil nog 'n kind hê. En dit moet gebeur voor ek 50 is.
ja. Is so, slaap jy?
Ons doen nou. Mm. Maar weet jy wat is amazing wat mense sê? Mense sê altyd kinders is harde werk. As ek maar alles in die lewe is harde werk.
So.
Like alles is harde werk. Moenie vir my sê dit is harde werk nie. Alles is harde werk. Mm. En is amazing as jy kinders het dan dan kry jy net hierdie supernatural capacity to do what you need to do with your own kids. It's like this grace that just comes over you. Maak jy saak of jy net 2 ure aanslaap nie. You get up, you go. Maar ja, hierdie dag is jy so bietjie.
Dis jou eerste kind.
Mm.
So jy was jy op 44 daar rond.
Ja, ja.
Ek dink dis 'n beter tyd om ouer te wees. Net better when you're a bit older or no? What? You were the other way around.
Yeah, ek was ultimately on a manier om, I can't judge, but I feel like when I was younger, I had more energy. And now that my kids are older as well, I still feel younger. Doesn't make any sense. So I'm still, I mean, you grow with your kids anyway. But I feel the amount of energy I had when my kids were younger was incredible. I can't imagine myself being an older parent, but then I don't have the experience. So I wouldn't know.
Maybe it's a man's perspective because I was more mature. When I had my kids and more patient.
Never too late.
What, to have another baby?
Absolutely.
Hey, maybe that's... Are you mad?
Yeah. Well, if I had my baby when I was younger, she had to come and visit me in Beskoppie. So it is good that I need...
You know...
That's what I was about to say. I think, honestly, what we just learned from this conversation is every person to themselves.
Yes.
You were very honest and open about your life. And I think that maak jou meer geloofwaardig om te kom waar jy nou is en te doen wat jy nou doen. So we 'n paar stappiekies terugvat.
Ja.
Ons gaan nou praat oor Geroep vir Meer. Was dit so 3 boeke voor hierdie? When did you start opening up about
your life? Ek het my survivor partner hier by my. Ons was op Survivor Maldives. And so on that island, I had an incredible turnaround in my spirit with God. I had an incredible encounter there, if you want to call it that way, with the Lord. And then on that island, I felt prompted to write my first book. And the first book was about my journey in and out of rehab, in and out of mental institutions, because of substance use disorder, drug addiction, and mental health problems. And so that's kind of where it started. Mm. It took me 6 years to write the first book. It was a long, long time. And the book did very well. And so the second book I wrote about mental illness, ADHD, anxiety disorders, depression and stuff that a lot of people suffer from, but people don't really speak about it. People are afraid to ask for help. It gets frowned upon. And there is a lot of good help. You know, you get all these different classes. You get people that say, oh, the psychiatry, you know, it's from the devil. I'm not going to use medication. And then you get people that the reason I wrote the book, especially the mental health book, was to share my experiences with my healing process. That is always a holistic approach that you have to take to stuff like that. And then now the third book, which has got not really anything to do with that, but more a call to people to wake up and say that, listen, there's more to life than just what you think.
But going back to the mental health, the addictions, what have you been told about your life by professionals? Which came first? Was the one a consequence of the other?
No. So the reason it's so difficult to speak about addiction is because it's never about the addiction. It's not the drugs, because the drugs is not the problem. The drugs is actually the solution.
Mm.
The solution to the addict. It might be a bad solution, but it's a solution nonetheless. And it's a solution to what? Well, it's a solution to this undercurrent, the problem of feeling exceptionally uncomfortable in yourself, always apart from discomfort and unease and pain. And so the drugs and the alcohol or anything, whatever you use, whether it's gambling, porn addiction, whatever, it's always the solution to that. Whether it will obviously end up in destruction. But I was very relieved when I was told that addiction or substance use disorder is an illness. And it's not a moral dilemma. It's not because you've got bad self-will or weak self-will.
Mm.
It's actually an illness that anybody can really develop. Some people are more prone to it or not, but once you have it, you have it. In other words, the only way towards recovery is complete abstinence, which is difficult. It's very difficult. I said yesterday I did 2 functions this weekend, and I'm blessed to go across the country and chat to people about quite a few things. But I said that I often want to use. Like, I just want to use. I just want to escape. I want to take a gram of cocaine, take one big line. I want to, you know, I want to drink myself into stupor every now and again and stuff, because I just sometimes want to escape my brain, escape my mind, escape everything. And just for that while, numb everything and feel at peace. But I can't, because I've flown back in the ring with Mike Tyson 9 times thinking this time I'm going to knock him down. And then every single time the same thing happens. So eventually you have to surrender and then live a life of sobriety, which is exciting and great and very rewarding.
Yeah, it's an important thing that you said there. Sometimes you don't want to be yourself.
Yeah.
And that is the escape that alcohol and you don't want to be yourself or your situation for a lot of people.
People look at you and they go, you know, wow, he's overcome it. Like, you overcome it on a daily basis. You don't just overcome it and all of a sudden there's a success and wow, look at the, it's not like that.
And you can never go back. You don't ever want to go back. Yeah. Because here's the thing, some days you are more comfortable with yourself than others. Yeah. I think most people experience it like that. It's obviously just the measure, the intensity and the level that changes. That's where the psychology and the psychiatry and modern medicine also comes into play. Mm. And you should never ever fear that. That is a much safer solution in the long run than the drugs.
Absolutely.
And the alcohol, for goodness sake.
Do you know what is a big challenge at the moment out there is? There are so many treatment facilities out there at the moment, okay? And there's a lot of rubbish out there and there's a lot of good treatment facilities, and parents don't know where to send their kids because there's so many different ideas about treatment. You've got the ones where you go and you've got to work for like 9 months and they throw a Bible on your head and you get punished, and then you get other kind of treatment facilities. And that's one thing that I think people should get educated on. Like, what is the correct help for my child? Also, because not every single addict, because most addicts has got a mental health illness that's primary or secondary to substance use disorder. So there's something underlying, some mental health issue. Mm. And so it's important that not all addicts are fit for all treatment facilities.
Okay.
There's one treatment facility group. And the reason I speak about them, they're non-profit, so it doesn't matter. But there are a lot of people that can't afford treatment facilities.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And I'm interested. I want to help the addict that's completely buggered. You know, he doesn't have medical aid. He can't go to an 80 grand in for 6 week treatment. Yeah. He's like completely, he doesn't have family anymore. He doesn't have anybody that'll help him. And there's a group called Hope Recovery Wellness Center. And they're in Potch and they are in Bloemfontein. And my friend, listen, Martin, you must go there one day. Their prices are so reasonable. It's about 9,000 rand a month. But what they get is unreal. I've been to so many treatment facilities. I've been affiliated with treatment facilities. I've been to 9 treatment facilities in my life. 9 rehabs.
Sure.
Okay. And I was clean before Survivor, thank God. 2 years before Survivor. That was 16 years. Thank you. Woo! But it's just, it's such a beautiful place. And also parents must understand, like, even having said that, is that treatment is not the thing that's going to get you clean. They're going to teach you tools.
Mm.
You need to take the tools, take responsibility, practice the tools, go for aftercare, go to your meetings, go to that, because the world's not going to change. Don't expect your parents to change and the world to change and the dealer's going to change and everything's going to change. You're going to walk out here, you're going to be a changed person, and you're going to have to make some serious sacrifices in your life.
And that is a lot of ownership.
Yeah. Taking personal responsibility.
And accountability.
Yeah. That is a whole lot. And that is also not a skill that everyone has. Yeah. Some people take it for granted. Some people may have grown up differently where those skills were taught.
Yeah.
Schools, maybe a friend, family along the way. But there are a lot of people, and that's foreign language to people, that fact. And it doesn't matter how many institutions you've been. If you don't take accountability, in other words, you rid yourself of good excuses, it's never going to work for you.
You know, in other words,
are easy.
Jumping,
are more available.
Jumping out of the self-pity pool. You know, the most powerful prayer that I've ever read in my life. It was at my first treatment facility. I was a heroin addict, an intravenous heroin addict. Rocked up there and didn't want to stay then. As I walked out, I said, I'm going to RHT, refusal of hospital treatment. I'm going to walk out of here. And I bumped into a prayer that said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the people I can, and the wisdom to know that person is I. Very powerful. Eh?
That's very, very powerful.
And, you know, getting to that understanding that if I want things to change, I need to change. If I want things to get better, I need to get better. You know?
Can I ask? So I think for a lot of people, very often when you've been an addict or on an addictive relationship, often the addict goes for treatment and then comes out and sometimes expects the people around them to now be fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm fine now. So why are you still upset? Why are you so?
Why are you still there?
They're still dealing with the damage that you've left behind.
The codependent, you're massive.
So how did you work with the people that you've done damage to?
Yeah.
And give them the time and the space to actually deal with their own issues around your addiction.
Yeah, so that's very difficult. So obviously addiction is a family illness. When the addict gets ill, the people that live around the trauma and the pain and the addiction, they become the codependent. So they become controlling, manipulative and all of this because they want the addict to come clean. They try so many things so that the addict can come clean without realizing that they are also powerless in trying to change the addict. Mm. So they build up resentments, there's hurt, there's all of that stuff. So you come out, you clean, and then they sit with that stuff. And so codependency is a big thing. It's a person that lives with somebody that goes with trauma, adult child syndrome. And so these people need to go for their own healing. They need to go to Codependency Anonymous. They need to work on their adult child issues. They also need to go through their own healing process. For example, parents that are alcoholic or abusive and they've got little children and the father lies there in the kitchen and he's passed out and you've got this little boy that needs to take care of the dad. What happens is the kid suddenly plays the adult role because the father is the child that needs to be taken care of. Now, he's too little to emotionally grasp what's going on. So in the process, he develops what you call adult child syndrome, which will create chaos in his life for all the relationships. All the relationships that he will get involved in will create chaos because he'll be a perfectionist. He'll be a people pleaser of note. He'll become completely codependent. And so he needs healing as well. So there's a lot of support for parents. Because first of all, the addict can't expect you just to forgive me. The addict needs to go make amends. The addict needs to go do and work his 12 steps and go through this process. But the other people also, with the resentments and the hurt, they also need to go for therapy.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever mentioned that.
Codependency is a big thing. So there's a book written by Melody Beattie, Codependency No More. She's the one that coined the term codependency in the 80s. And so when parents WhatsApp me or email me and say, my child, the first thing I say is, you go buy that book. Because the first thing you need to do to help your son is to help you and not enable him. Because, for example, codependents enable. That's what they do. When I help you and you're an addict, I was caught by the police quite a few times and I was saved and rescued by people not to actually face my consequences and go sit in a jail. What should have happened is me go sit in a cell because it's the consequences that gets addicts clean.
Yeah.
So parents go and they enable. They think they help, but they enable. And so it allows the addict to continue the using. So parents must realize, what are the boundaries? What do I say no for? What am I responsible for? What are you responsible for? When do I put you out the house? You know, I spoke to a Dwimini the other day. It's a very well-known pastor Dwimini in this country. And his wife, they came and saw me. And their son had a problem. So I said, how old is the son? Well, he's 34. Okay. Where does the son stay? No, he stays on the property. Okay. Who does the son's dishes? No, I do. Who does the son's washing? No, I do. Who does? What does he do? Well, he sits in his room and smokes grass and smokes meth. I say, but you are 100% part of the problem.
Yeah,
you are part of the problem. You're actually killing your child in a way, indirectly. But they say, but I can't put him out on the streets because he's going to die. Listen, let me tell you, addicts can survive on the streets very well. But it's that thing that parents do not know. So I don't blame them because, I mean, you love your child, but what do you do as a parent? And they're very difficult things to do. I'm not saying it's easy.
Tough love.
Yeah.
But I also think it's not just parents, it's partners as well. So wives, husbands, you know, family. It's not just parents because often addicts are also in relationships. You in this relationship, you need to be able to take that hard stance and go, I won't be a part of killing you.
Yeah. But the natural reaction is, I want to make things better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Groeve meer om successful te leven. What is success? How do you measure it?
Well, I measure it by the quantity and quality of the relationships that I have in my life. Now, that Om Successful to Live was actually the publishers that wanted to put that tagline. Because I've got when you look at the word success, there's so much that you can say about it. I do talk about money. I do talk about financial success. I do talk about achievement because it's also beautiful things in life. It depends what season you are in your life, right? You've got to go out and you've got to achieve big things. You've got to create massive things. You want to be able to add value. And there's a chapter there where I say there's nothing wrong with money. You know, when I stand in a church and I always say, who here likes money? Nobody puts up their hand. I say, well, give it to me. I don't want you to be sad. I can do wonderful things with money. It's not the money that's the problem. It's always the heart issue, right? And so it's actually, that word should have been fulfillment. Because I wrote the book because after the last 25 years that I've been speaking in front of audiences, and there's one thing that I noticed. First of all, it's the lack of life that people actually have. The second thing is that, you know, if you ask 100 people out there, what is your dream? what's the vision for your life? 3% will tell you. Only 3. That's the average. 3% will say, I've written it down. This is my goal. This is what I'm going to do. That's the vision for my life. And so I thought to myself, why is it so easy for people just to settle for second best? Like, why do most people just kind of park in the desert somewhere, live a second-class citizen life, and just go, well, you know, kind of this is what I want to do? Because you wake up in the mornings. It must have happened to you. And, you know, you wake up and you go, well, is this now it? Like, is this my life? You know, you're married, you've got children, and is this now it? And it's not it. There is more. But very few people actually do a lot of introspection to find out what is their why, what is their reason that they're waking up. Do they live with intention? Do they have a vision for their lives? And because a lot of people don't know how to do it. You aren't taught in school to have a dream. They don't teach you how to create true wealth at school, in school. They teach you to sell your time for money, go to university, and then get a job. And the acronym for job today is just over broke. Just over broke. You know, for most people.
One paycheck away from disaster.
Yes. And so I wrote the book just to help people. You know, I don't believe that God sat for a billion years and designed you and put you in your mom's stomach and womb you together so that you can just, you know, come out and for 40 years just work and you know, one day retire with a pension and a pen.
Live to work.
There's more. There's a vision and a dream over your life. And so few people, when they take their ships out to the harbor, are actually, you know, have their sails ready. Most people are just like a ship on the sea, and wherever the wind kind of takes you, they're just kind of where they go.
Yeah.
Right? And so, yeah, that was the heart of where the book comes from.
Iets wat jy aanraak, and I think it's verskriklik belangrik, want it's quite prevalent. It's very common these days. People confuse victims with victim mentality. I think a lot of people think they're victims. You may be a victim of something, but you also may just be a victim of something that you're creating.
Yep.
Which is there's another name for that completely. En jy sê so los die slagoffer mentaliteit en aangeleerde hulpeloosheid, maar dan sê jy ook ontleed jou verskonings en besef watter denkpatrone nie geldig is nie. So it's the important to make a clear difference between the things that are actually holding you back.
Yes.
And things that you are just dreaming up that are holding you
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. So
excuses versus reasons.
Yeah.
And that's going to hold you back when it comes to reaching some kind of success. Yeah. Whatever your success looks like. Yes. That's the difference, right?
That's the difference. So there's this wonderful quote that I use that says, you know, you're not the victim of your circumstances, you're the architect of it. You're the architect
I like
of it.
That.
And so there's a chapter that I write about excuses, and I call it the sickness called excusitis, right?
Love it.
And so I want to share with people that every single excuse is valid that you might have, you know? But people think that's the test to justify my excuses for not doing what I need to do. That's not the test. Vusi Tembekwa says it so beautifully. He says the test is that are you willing to do whatever it takes to get the results that you want in your life? That's the test, because we all have excuses to not do whatever we do. And it's not about competency. We all have competency and we all have it inside of us. When I talk to salespeople, I say, how many cars do you sell a month? He'll say, 4, but I can't sell 8. I said, no, but how many do you sell? Well, 4, but I can. No, you don't sell 8. You sell 4. Yes, okay, 4. Have you got children? He says, yes. I say, if I take your little daughter and I kidnapped your daughter for a month, and I say, if you don't sell 10 cars this month, your daughter, you won't see your daughter alive. How many cars will you sell? You'll sell 10 cars. Okay, right. So it's not about competency. It's about what drives us. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, there's only two things that drive us. It's either pain or pleasure, but pain is a much greater motivator than pleasure. They say when the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of moving, then you move. Okay. But the reason it's like that is because when we are born, we grow up in an accountability system. If we don't do what is expected of us or the minimum, there's a consequence. If you don't pass your grade, there's a consequence. If you don't do the minimum at work, there's a consequence. If you go to university and you don't pass, there's a consequence. So you do whatever you need to do just so there's a consequence. Now you get into the work environment. You graft, you might hate your work, but you do whatever you need to do because if you don't do it, there's going to be loss. Okay. So you don't want to face the pain and the loss. Right. Now, when you have a vision for your life and a dream for your life, okay, you're going to have a lot of pain and sacrifice and loss. And so most people aren't willing to go through that. That's the psychology behind it. Because if you've got a vision, for example, most entrepreneurs, okay, most people that have a goal and a vision, almost, what's the word?
Compared
with a Chinese bamboo tree. Do you know the Chinese bamboo tree? Do you know the story about it?
No.
Okay, so the Chinese bamboo tree seed is the hardest seed in the world, okay? If you plant it, You've got to water it every morning and every night, every day. Okay, not for 1 year, not for 2 years, not for 3 years, for 5 years before you see a result, before a little plant comes up. Okay, if you miss one day, the plant dies.
Jeez.
Okay, and then in 30 days, it grows 1 meter a day. Suddenly, it just jumps up, and in 30 days, it's a 30-meter bamboo.
Sure.
Now, the question is, did the bamboo never grow? Well, no, it did. It grew roots, massive roots to sustain this thing.
Okay.
But the point I'm trying to make is that you have to go through a lot of consistency, a lot of effort. You're going to have to bear a lot of laughter from your friends and a lot of sacrifices. And people are going to think you're crazy and think, what are you doing? Like Noah's Ark, building this ark. And people going, Noah, what are you doing? We haven't even seen rain and you're doing this thing. You did it for 100 years. And consistently carry on with the faith that you're going to have the results one day. Because in the process, the hardship, all that hardship grows the roots. That's the character that you grow. Most people don't want to go through it. They quit on the 17th of January. That's National Quitters Day. It takes 17 days for somebody, most people, to say, I've got my New Year's resolutions. I'm not going to be more. And then on the 17th of January, boop, they're out. They quit.
The word discipline was used at school in quite a
threatening manner.
Threatening way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you become an adult and you realize, oh, gosh. Discipline is a big thing, but it's also a small thing. It's like it manifests in the smallest of ways. Those little disciplines. Is it something you can teach yourself though?
And what you can?
Who can teach you discipline?
You can. So
not in a school kind of headmaster. Yeah. The consequence way. Yes. Is there another way of learning?
There's a verse in my favorite book that says, "Without a vision, my people perish." Okay, that perish does not mean die. It means my people throw off self-discipline and self-restraint. And so there's a teaching that says, broad is the way that leads to death and destruction. Many people find it. And narrow is the way that leads to life. Few people find it. People think that has got to do something with your salvation or whatever. It doesn't. It's an old rabbinic teaching that was taught 300 years before Christ. And that teaching, it had everything to do with intention. The teaching said the following, that if you don't have intention or a vision or a goal that is in front of you, that is clear, but deurdringend is, okay? If you don't have that, you will not know what to say no to in life. In other words, people that win in life, their yeses determines their noes, what they say no to. And so the essence in that teaching is the following. You don't have to have the intention to be poor one day. You must just have no intention to take care of your finances and poverty will overtake you automatically. You don't have to have the intention to be a bad wife or bad husband. You must just have no intention to be a good wife and a good husband and bad wife behavior will automatically overtake you. You don't have to have the intention to be fat and overweight and whatever one day. You must just have no intention to be
healthy,
and it will overtake you automatically. So it means that if you don't have a vision, a compelling vision, and anybody can create a vision for themselves. God is not going to come to you and say to you, this is your vision. It doesn't work like that. You've got to go and sit and dream. You have brains gekry, imagination gekry, you can go and sit and create a dream and a vision for your life, and you can go and achieve it. But now suddenly you're going to go through uncomfortable waters because you're going to step out. Now you're going to have to go learn things that you haven't learned, surround yourself with people that you don't know. You're going to have to do things and change habits and sacrifice and go through that stuff in order to achieve it. Now, people don't give up because of pain. They give up because of pain without a purpose. Okay. Now, what do you do with self-discipline? Where do you start that? Because you need the consistency in the self-discipline. The first thing I always tell people is the best way to start learning this is to get up an hour earlier every day. Anybody can do it. That's how you start teaching self-discipline. So if you get up at 6, start getting up at 5.
We're going to do it upstanding.
Yeah. We're doing our bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. So you're doing it because when you wake up in the mornings, there's this heavy, uncomfortable, it's cold, it's winter, you're cushioned, you can actually, and the snooze button becomes your best friend. How many times have you had the intention to go, tomorrow morning I'm waking up earlier, I can gym to gaan, and then the next morning comes and it doesn't happen. So what you do is, You said, okay, it's not the school way, but because most people have an employee mentality, there's always a consequence. You have to put that in place. You have to go to somebody and say, keep me accountable. If I don't do it, there should be a consequence. Okay, so what I do is I've got a goal, for example, we've got a few businesses and stuff, and so we've got a financial goal and a thing that we want to do in 9 months, my wife and I. We set the goal, I go to my accountability partners and I say, if we don't achieve this, I will pay a certain amount of money to somebody that I hate or an organization that I hate.
Wow.
Or something. Yeah. And you've got to put that in contract and he will keep you accountable. That if you don't achieve that, you're going to suffer tremendous loss. And that money's not going to go to a charity. That money's going to go to Cannes Lions for example, that I hate, somebody that promotes it, something that you hate, you don't want to do, that forces you.
Wow.
That forces you. So people say, no, I don't want to do it. They say, but are you then serious about your goal? You said you want to be financially free. You said you want to do this. You said you want to do this. Yes, I'm going to do it. It's easy to say something. Let's put the structures in place so that you actually achieve it. Then people go, no. So, okay, but what's happening here now? Like, where are you now really at? Are you just, like most people, just saying things to make you feel good? Because it makes you feel good when you have New Year's resolutions and you go, this year I'm going to do this and this and this. It's all rubbish. It's just a fantasy.
So small victories are also a thing.
Yes.
Small victories, and I learned that one of the diets, or something along the line, or you know, fitness regimes. As jy die sny witbrood kan vervang met 'n sny, you know,
right.
Yeah, whatever. Those are small victories. I also, and just in closing, I also feel people make, and this is going to be controversial, people make too much about big dreams. Not everyone needs a big dream.
Mm.
Some people don't want to be the CEO of a company.
Mm.
Some people don't want to have their own business.
Mm. Absolutely.
Some people are happy just being a great mother or father or fisherman or whatever the case may be. Or just living an under the radar, normal, in inverted commas, life.
Yeah. That's valid.
Verstanya, I think it's probably a product of the 80s and 90s where all these people spoke about, you know, the big dreams and reach for the stars and stuff.
Yeah.
The stars are different. The scale is different for different people.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I find that sometimes depressing because people don't ask you how your day was today. They ask you, how's your career going? By the way, what are you doing next?
The toxic positivity.
Yeah.
It is sometimes small victories, but and I want to say this now, sometimes small dreams.
Absolutely. You've got to celebrate every small little thing along the way because at the end of the day, it's not about achieving the dream. And it's not about that. It's about the person you become in the process.
Thank you.
That's the thing. Because once you step out and you want to, let's say you want to have a massive dream of earning a lot of money one day. It's not about the money because it's not about the money. It's about the person you need to become in the process to steward it in a godly way.
Mm.
And so if you chase success, you're going to feel miserable if you feel unsuccessful without success, without having the success. You have to be grateful for where you are in life. You've got to be in the moment. You've got to experience it. You've got to try things and go out and explore life and stuff. But you're absolutely right. Some people are called to do whatever they need to be. And that's the thing. That book is very much about your calling in life.
That is what I'm taking. That's what I'm taking from you. And what I'm getting from you is you have to have a dream that you wanted for yourself.
Yes.
You want a success or a goal that you're working towards that you want for yourself. Not society.
Mm.
Not die bure, die res van die gemeente nie, maar letterlik, jy moet iets in die lewe hê wat jy wil bereik of hê. That's your motivator,
absolutely,
right? And you must set that.
Absolutely.
No one else.
Like, I mean, the biggest dream for me would be to be the greatest father to my little girl. Lemay, right?
It's a big dream.
And so I want to give a free gift to the audience. So if you go to heikieberg.com, which is my website, and you just put your email in there, I send the first three chapters of the book for free. So if you want the first three chapters for the book for free, just go to the website and... Dis nou Afrikaans though, so ek weet die audience is ook maar bietjie Afrikaans.
100%, jy het gesê net hoe jy working towards something 9 months from now.
Is it a bar?
Martin, please pray that it happens as quickly as possible. My father was 54 when my brother was born. I'm like, I don't want to be that way.
You need to call your wife.
Groep
vir meer om suksesvol te lewe, Heikie Berg, Claudia Skrywer van Top Verkoper, my storie van hoop, wenner van pryse, inspirerende man. I understand why people want to spend time around you, in front of you, with you. Alles van die beste, liefde by die huis. And thank you for this amazing book. And thanks for sharing just thoughts and seeds. And as it turns out, in the month of mental health awareness. It's all that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
You're with your Auburn family. Breakfast with Martin Besser.